tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley group welcome to Kathy.
Wow, this is an exciting meeting. My name is Kathy, and I am an alcoholic. This is a club soda. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'd like to thank Bill for asking me to participate in my recovery. I can really talk louder if you'd like, but God, where do I begin? You know, I am grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for the life I live today. I will start there. I was not quite sure how to, you know, give my share, because I know when I read the email, they talked about that this group really, there was an emphasis on talking about the 12 steps. And I've lived the 12 steps, you know. It's either come to me or I've found myself right in that place. I want to welcome all the chip takers and the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous as they welcomed me, you know. And I've heard people say it in different ways, you know, last house on the block and all this stuff. And you'll hear my story and you'll see that my attitude and my perception of Alcoholics Anonymous was different. I was born in San Antonio, Texas, and my parents moved on out to Long Beach. And my dad left my mom when I was two, and she was I don't know, she was bitter about it, but I took a lot of ass whoopings for it, you know. And I'm the kind of child that was thrown in the closet just to get out of the way. And I was physically beaten a lot, I believe, because I was an annoyance. And I was neglected for certain. That's when the playpens weren't as luxurious as they are today. It was a little thin piece of plastic like this with a little thin foam inside of it. And it was all cracked up and everything. And I remember it well, you know. And so somewhere along the line, one of the uncles in the family, he said, you know, if you don't want your kid, I know someone who does, you know. And there was no fight about it. And he walked me out that door, and I met my mom and my dad. And these people were rather old, much old. I guess they were already, I should talk because I'm there now, but they were probably already in their 60s, maybe, when they adopted me. I was 4 years old. And the reason I want to mention that they're old, because I had a problem about that, you know. And then I had a lot of regrets about it. But anyway, so they were in Alcoholics Anonymous, lo and behold, you know. And so I was going to meetings since I was 4 years old. And I was playing with my dolls and having AA meetings. And if my mom should pass by, I would say, oh, ladies and gentlemen, we have Angie. Would you like to say something, Angie? I mean, I went through the whole gamut, you know, of an AA meeting. And so you would think that I would probably never have touched a drink or needle, pill, fix of any kind. Because I'm raised with these AA parents, you know, that would have this way of life. But that's not so, you know. That's not how we become an alcoholic or an addict, you know. It's something deeply rooted. I can't get into the medical terminology of it all. All I know, though, it seems like it's every fiber of my being. You know, it's what I do. Once I take a drink, it's on and cracking. You know, I have no regard for anyone or anything. I'm living this life in AA, and I don't know, somewhere along the age of 9 years old, something happened in my life. I don't want to get into details about it, but I made a decision that I would never trust or believe in anyone from this day forward, from that day forward, and that I had only me to rely on. So I just took little bits and pieces of everybody as I grew up in my way of life. And you know, a friend of mine used to say it, I'm a misinformed person by misinformed people. And that's just kind of how, you know, I made my rules, you know, and my morals and my values were built. I enjoyed it. You know, I started drinking when I was about 8 or 9 years old, and how I was introduced to alcohol was, let me tell you, I ended up from Long Beach making my way to Hollywood, the melting pot. And so there was a lot of people there, different people, and there was this family, they were French. And so, you know, my friend asked me, you know, in elementary school, she said, hey, you want to come over to my house for dinner? And I said, yeah, cool, all right, let me ask my mom. And my mom said, sure, it was only a block over. Because they're French, and at their table, they serve wine for everybody. All the kids, everybody gets a glass of wine. And so I'm cool with that. I drink this wine. And then we go do the dishes, and we drink some more wine that they have cases of it in the kitchen. And that's how I was introduced to alcohol. My next encounter with alcohol was, there was this girl, she was German, and she lived across the street from my elementary school, and her mom was a bombshell, beautiful redhead, and so she was out on many dates, you know, in the Hollywood lifestyle. And so she would have the neighbor next door behind closed doors babysit us behind these other closed doors, you know. So it was my idea to ask, you know, hey, so how do we get into that cabinet? It was a liquor cabinet that she had. And I told her, well, look, I said, you're white, so you drink the white stuff, and I'm brown, so I'll drink the brown stuff. And that was, you know, the only way that I knew what I was indulging in, you know, what I was getting into. And we drank till we passed out. You know, that's how we drank. And then it just seemed like I just tried to always capture that moment. I was always trying to find out who had the alcohol, what house and their parents, you know, drank. And that's where I wanted to be. And so I was doing all this under the nose of my AA parents. I don't know, it became a problem, I guess, for them eventually by the time I was 12. And so she talked to her AA friends. Mind you, I thought you guys were a great group of people for them. Had nothing to do with me, you know. And so I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous in 1979. And that didn't work, obviously, for me. Not that I don't identify, just it didn't work out. I wasn't ready. And so, you know, this is how I live my life. So anyone who, relapses and comes back, I understand, you know, that doesn't have to be a requirement, though I always hear people say that. It's my story, you know, it's my story. Now, if you stick and stay, great. Wow, that's wonderful. My hat's off to you, really. But I went ahead and my drinking, I don't ever really remember it being fun, you know, and even more so to say that the other things that I've done in my life, there was nothing fun. So it's like, it's funny when I hear other people say funny stuff about their recovery, because I can't remember nothing funny, you know. All I know is I was seriously trying to get obliterated. I was always, you know, trying to get there, you know. There's a speaker that talks about that, you know, he always wanted to be over there, or you know he could never be here, you know. And I identified with that. I've been in and out of this fellowship, and in being in and out of this fellowship, I have met some great people, and they have dropped some pearls of wisdom on me. And you know, I believe that the seed was probably planted a long time ago for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. It just took a lot of watering, you know, to make it grow, you know. So, anyways, can you guys hear me gulping? I don't mean to. In growing up too, like I said, with my parents being old, I really separated myself from them. You know, we do little things as kids. I don't know about you, but me, one of them was, you know, I would tell my mom, because they would always say, oh, hey, your grandma's here. And I hated that. You know, I'm just talking about the little shit as we grow up in life, you know, that it doesn't seem like, you know, I never got a bike. You know, it wasn't like that, you know, so much. It's other little things for me, you know, that started to making me feel bad about me, and you know, and the things that I was doing, the things that I was thinking, the things that I was saying, you know. And every time I had to drink that down, or I had to, you know, do other things to, like, hopefully make it go away, you know, erase it, or just be able to live with it. And so, you know, one of the things was that my mom embarrassed me. I've never shared that before. Anyways, that my mom embarrassed me coming, and she would say, do you want me to come and pick you up from school? And I'd say, no. When I get home, you know. And so I started shoving my parents away. Okay, who does that? What kid does that? Anyway, so this kid did. Anyway, so I keep on drinking. I'm drinking, I'm meeting a lot of people, like I said. I'm just getting little bits and pieces from everybody, and I've lived quite a life, I'll tell you. I might not have had like some funny stories to tell you. Well, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe I had a few, but you know what? I don't regret my past. AA has really taught me that. I don't. And I've had some ugly past. You know, there's some things I can't share here because it's a mixed crowd, you know, but in a woman's meeting, you know, I believe in my fourth being for my sponsor only. And then, you know, the rest, you know, in a meeting like this, I'm supposed to speak in a general way, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And so, so I'm doing things like that, not liking Kathy. Every time I'm not liking Kathy, everything I'm doing, and you know what? There's this song that I hear, Can't Drink You Away. Well, you know, that's kind of like that. You know, I couldn't drink away my problems anymore. Somewhere along the line, it just, you know, they were there, if not multiplied with some other BS that I've gotten myself into. And I don't know, you know, like I said, I kept coming in and out. And so this one time, April 4th. No, it's not even April 4th. It was before that, and I'll explain that. I came in. I can't even remember that date anymore. I came in, and I wasn't sure that it was going to work. You know how they say, you know, you come in to what I thought was hopeless, but they talk about that mustard seed. And like I said, I feel like the seed had been planted in me some time ago. And so here I am one more time sitting in these seats of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think I was truly exhausted. You know, it was not anymore, I didn't have an idea. Every time, man, I got well, I had a plan, or it's like, oh, I get it now, you know. Don't go hang out with her, or don't get involved with him, or don't mix that with this, or don't go into that neighborhood, or whatever. Go to another city. I made a lot of geographics. And so, you know, I didn't have that plan when I sat there in that chair that day. And then, you know, it came to a point, because there was a time in a majority of my life that I never trusted you. And then at that day, as I sat in that chair, I no longer trusted me. And that's a bad place to be in, you know. And people talk about that can't live, can't die situation, you know. And And you know, if I'm not making it sound pretty, you know, it just wasn't pretty for me, you know. It was devastating, and it was, I was at that time done. And you know, there's a, somewhere in the book, it will talk about becoming sweetly reasonable. And I think that's the point I had come to when I started to ask this lady to be my sponsor. And when I started to come to the meetings. And when I started to do the reading. And when I started to do the writing. And when I was willing to do the basics, you know. There was a time that I even got down on my knees, you know. And that wasn't easy, you know. I've done a lot of crazy things as far as having a relationship with a God. There might have been one before I got to this fellowship. But it's just not in my life, you know, not for me. And and it was good for you, but not for me. And so again, I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for that as well, for giving me a power of my own understanding, a higher power of my own understanding. And it's, what a relief, man, because I was carrying a lot of weight, you know, a lot of weight. And so it was so good to be able to turn it over, you know. Anyways, you know, you want to talk about doing talking about the 12 steps. I feel me being here tonight, I'm already working on like a good majority of them, you know, honesty, hope, you know, integrity, humility, you know, just all these different principles behind the 12 steps. And that, my friends, is what I love. That's what keeps me high, you know, is that I'm not just working all these words with these letters bunched together, that there is a principle behind these steps that I have to implement in my life. I don't do it every day. I don't do it all day. And but when I'm doing it like that, how better my life is. You know, but there are moments where I'm just, you know, kind of running low, you know, or slow, you know. And I have practiced honesty. And, you know, this one lady I've known for years, you know, she's got 28 years, and she is now my sponsor. And I've asked her to be my sponsor before in the past, but she's just too spiritual for me. And I was her Eskimo, she says. I did a 12-step call on her, but I relapsed. She didn't. And I remember every time she'd celebrate a birthday, I don't care how many years I might have had in the fellowship at the time, or months or what have you, but I always thought, what is she seeing these people? She gets it. And I don't get it. You know, all the time, relapsing, or really not even feeling a part of you guys. Just doing the do. Almost feeling robotic, you know, go to a meeting, call a sponsor, you know, work with somebody else, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I wasn't feeling it from the inside. I was doing everything outside all the time. Going to the dances, going to the benefits, the events, whatever, you know. A lot of fellowshipping. Fellowshipping is not program. Meetings constitute a fellowship. The program is in the big book, you know, and in the 12 steps and 12 traditions. That's the program. And she used to tell me, I forgot what she used to tell me, I'm sorry. You know what, though? I have heard a lot of good things. And one of the things, because I'm getting to that, that's pretty much my story in a nutshell, is there's this lady that used to tell me, you know, Kathy, do things that make you feel good about being Kathy, not things that make you feel good. I don't know if I need to repeat that again or not, but I know I have to say it a few times in my own head. And, you know, I never heard anybody tell me that. I didn't hear that while I was holding, you know, a 40 in an alley hanging out with, you know, the fellas. I didn't hear that. And nobody told me, hey, do things that make you feel good about you, not things that make you feel good. You know, it was all about making me feel good, you know. And I get to this fellowship, I'm again, and I'm starting to do the things that I'm supposed to do. And I'm using this sponsor. I've never done that before. I'm using this sponsor. And you know what? She was perfect for me because she was taking my calls. And we were really working together because I'm telling you, I didn't know if I should get out with the left foot or the right foot. You know, I was having a very hard time living life without alcohol. And, I began to replace it little by little, you know, slowly with everything that it entails, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, everything that, you know, we're supposed to do here, you know, to keep our sobriety alive and well. I feel so hokey talking like that. I'm sorry. But life is good, you know, and my God is good. I am very grateful for what I have in my life. You know, my daughter, just to talk about kids a little bit, my daughter, she was my road dog. She, like, in that she took care of me. She took care of my son, you know, and I remember one time she was sitting down, and I was already been sober for some time now, and she said, "Hey, I had a dream." I don't want to get emotional, but I'm going to try to really hold back on that one. She said, "I had a dream," and I said, "Oh, yeah," and then I go, "What?" She goes, "About you using," and I said, "Are you drinking?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I thought she was going to come out with some crazy-ass story, you know, oh, you did this, you did that," and, you know, and no, all she said was, "Yeah, I had this dream that you drank again," and she said, she goes, "And I'm just here to tell you that I'm not going down that road again with you." And it really woke me up. It really woke me up because we talk about this being a family disease. You don't even know. I didn't even know. You know, I was doing things to my kids because, you know, they were coming home from school and going to bed earlier and earlier and earlier every day, you know, because I had to get them out of the way. And so, you know, so at first it was that, you know, just do your homework and then stay in your room. You know, just do it in your room. And so she had to confess to me one time that, "Mom, I just want to let you know that we used to sneak out of the room and go play with the kids for a little while, and then we snuck back in." Yeah, and I felt terrible about that. That really broke my heart that she felt she had to confess that to me. And I thought, wow, you know, family disease, that's what they say. You know, it affects everybody. And anyway, so I've been through a few relationships, and you know what? When this one sponsor of mine, she really helped me to own mine. And when I started to really look at my part in those relationships, because I'd like to say I was the damn best woman you will ever meet when it comes to me and a man, you know. And, you know, I'm this and I'm, you know, I'm damn, I'm whatever, you know, BS. And when I started to own mine, you know, of whatever, like, it could be like, you know, ulterior motives, you know, just those, you know, I don't give nothing for free, you know, and I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about anything that I do, you know. That's a whole nother. Just that I had expectations. I have expectations in everything that I do almost. That takes a train of thought. I have to have that reminded to me, and that's why my sponsor really kicks in for me, you know, because she reminds me, "Hey, you know what? Sounds like you're having expectations," you know. So newcomer, if this lady put it to me like this, because I thought I was going to get well, and that I was going to be relieved, and that I was going to become the lady that I saw other women being, not that I thought I'd be, but, and I wanted dignity and integrity. I didn't know those words, by the way, before I got here. But I wanted to be that lady. I wanted to be a smart lady. I wanted to be a calm lady. I wanted to be, you know, a woman. You know, and I was so immature. I was so self-willed, and I cared about nothing and no one. I've already explained that. You know, so if my outsides look like I got it all, it's not like that. You know, it's a practicing, and you know, I miss that in the steps when you're reading it. You know, it's not just on the book. You know, you have to take it. My mom used to say, you have to take those steps off the wall, Kathy, and apply them to your life. And I thought, God, she's old. That's old people talk. Who talks like that? Anyway, so, but, you know, she was right. She was right. And, I miss that word practice. I have to practice them. I may never perfect it. And this lady, she had told me, you know, because I told her, I said, when is all this, like, the roller coaster, man, when is it, like, stop? She goes, it doesn't, Kathy. It just gets further apart. You know, so if for me, you know, I was looking for that right now, it's all going to get good, you know. And I want it now. And it doesn't happen like that. I had to do some footwork. And you know, they talk about this one lady. She goes, if you want self-esteem, Kathy, you got to do esteemable acts. You know, and if you want self-respect, Kathy, then you need to be respectful. You know, and it was the same thing that St. Francis of Assisi's prayer says, basically. And I was too selfish and self-centered and self-seeking to understand what that prayer could even mean. But it's so odd that when you get into this program, how, you know, everything seems contradictory, but it's in giving that you get. Wow, you know, you people are confused. You know, I just could not get that. And now, I remember my dad saying something one time to me. He says, you know, Kathy, he says, you're not going to know what it is to feel good until you do something good. And I thought, another old thing to say. And so, but you know what, ladies and gentlemen, that you need to stay. That's the only way you're ever going to know. I've got a sponsee that always wants to run for that drink. She always wants to get out. You know, and it makes me sad because I can't make her stay. I can't say anything to make her stay. I can only tell her what she'd be missing. You know, they talk about don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happens. And what I do know, sadly enough, for my sponsee, is that it's easy for her to throw away this program because she hasn't done anything to get into it. You know, you get out of it what you put into it. And I used to have a hard time sharing in front of the men because I used to think, what could I offer them? I know nothing about what it's like for them. You know, but I'm here to tell you, ladies, even that I learned a lot of good things from men. And I'll give you this one experience that I had. See, because I come from alleys, I come from streets, I drink out of the bottle, and I talk a lot of yin-yang, you know. And I say that like that because there's a little girl in the room that was brought to my attention. So there was a guy in a meeting one time, and across the room from the meeting, he goes, hey, baby, come and sit over here. You know, referring to his lap. And I for the first time, I felt embarrassed. I don't feel embarrassed. I'd say something back, you know. And I thought, you know, and I just, you know, and I moved on, you know. But I felt bad. And I'm thinking, why do I feel bad? I'm not so perfect. I'm not a lady. I'm not worth, you know, to feel like this. I started to feel uncomfortable with myself. So I told my sponsor, I said, what's happening to me? It was uncomfortable. And they talk about the common becoming uncommon, you know. And I didn't know what to do. And she goes, tell him. And I told him, hey, you know, and this was hard for me to do. Because, you know, if a guy does anything to you, he comes with the game. Comes with the life. You know, you don't always correct somebody about that. And so anyways, I told him, I said, hey, you know what, I didn't appreciate the way you talked to me the other day at a meeting. I said, and he apologized. Just that simple. He apologized. And you know, ladies, I guess that's where I started to become this lady that I talked about always being, instead of that street girl, you know? And so it comes slowly. So you got to stay in order for those little growing experiences to happen. And they don't always feel good. You know, my sponsor always used to say that. She used to say, Kathy, doing the right thing isn't always going to feel good. You know, but I tell you, I've got my kids in my life. They are in my life. I've got grandkids in my life, which I really enjoy that part. And I've got a great relationship now. And he loves me, and I love him back. And I trust him. And he trusts me, because he can. You know, that didn't come easy, but not with us, but with all the other trial and error. And I don't know. I'll finish about my parents. My dad, I was able to be there before he passed away. I took care of him. And so I was able to make my living amends to him like that. And then with my mom, you know, I don't know about, some of us can be daddy's girls. I was never a daddy's girl because I wasn't close to my father. I felt he had rented a toy for my mom. That's how I felt, you know, that now that, you know, she's here, you won't ask anything of me. Go play with your little girl, you know. And that's why I never really built that. Remember I'm talking about that mind? You know, that perception was really messed up. I was really messed up by the time I got here, and it took years, and it's still taking years to, you know, work through that, you know. And my mom, I ended up wanting to take care of her, getting to take care of her, and my husband was very good about taking care of her also, you know. And we took care of her for quite a few years, and she's ended up passing away. Her birthday was March 5th, 1956, and being in the fellowship. And so I want to tell you too about her was that she would hold the big book. She carried that big book all the time, and she had it while she was in this hospital bed at our house. And she, if you come in and spend time with her, she would say, you know what's in this book? And I thought she was going to say something really profound, not realizing that she had Alzheimer's. And she said, there's a bunch of drunks in this book, and they're telling their story. And I said, I know, isn't that pretty neat? Yeah, that's interesting. But she would read that book, you know. Coming to AA, I've been able to make those amends, and especially to my mom was a big one. There was something else I wanted to say. Talking about self-esteem, I had a friend, Noni. He used to tell me, you know what, don't waste time up there at the podium saying, I'm nervous. He goes, that's so egotistical. So I tried not to do that tonight. But there's another lady, she used to tell me, she goes, Kathy, you know, when you're thinking less of yourself, you're still thinking of yourself, you know. So, I mean, it's just like I have those kind of people in my life, you know, that really carried me along. And unlike my sponsee, and God bless her, she's always in my prayers, but I've fortunately done the work, and I'm still continuing to do the work and the footsteps and going back to the basics when I need to. I've got this sponsor in my life who I went sponsorless for a while because we made this transition out to Bakersfield, and it was a little hard for me to get close to anyone. I just didn't identify with them. I wasn't comfortable putting myself out there. You know, okay, we get like that, right? I told you I'm not perfect. And so I ended up asking my friend who's got this 28 years. And so she tricked me. I was telling her a problem, and then she told me, okay, I want you to read Bill's story and step one. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, because I thought maybe I'd find a relief and answer in that, you know. And so I read that, you know, step one and Bill's story. And then she goes, okay, now I want you to read step two and chapter two. And so I'm like, oh, I see where we're going with this, you know. So it's like, again, my dad said, you're never too old to learn. So no matter what, if we've got 20 days, if we've got 13 years, if we've got 28 years or 55 years, you know, we're never too old to learn. The book is not a novel. It's a textbook. You know, and the 12 and 12 is also a great book for me, too. I think I'm done. I want to thank you again for listening.